Thank you, Susie. And thank you to the League of Women Voters for organizing this forum. Thank you all for coming and taking time out of your evening to care about this issue and learn about it. I know that there are more than a few people in this audience who could give this presentation for me. There are some people with expertise in redistricting, and then there are those who maybe haven't thought about it so much. But I tell you, everybody should know about this issue and care about it, because it will affect our political landscape for the coming decade. What is done by our elected officials over the course of the coming year will have a huge impact on our representation and on our government for a decade to come. So this is something that we better get busy and think about now, because it's going to have implications for some time to come. Notice that today the Wall Street Journal has an article on redistricting, and it talks a lot about Wisconsin, and Wisconsin being a real battleground when it comes to redistricting battles. And there's a reason for that, and I'll get into that as we go along. I want to first start by just saying a word about the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. I'm not here to talk much about the Democracy Campaign. I really want to focus on the condition of our democracy and how redistricting affects the condition of our democracy. But I do think it's important for people to know where we're coming from as an organization. We are a nonpartisan watchdog group, as Susie said. We first and foremost specialize in tracking the money in state politics. We have the state's only searchable database of contributors to state campaigns in Wisconsin on our website. People can go to wisdc.org and free of charge, they can see who's giving to whom, who's providing the money to their elected representatives and candidates for office. So first and foremost, we aim to help the people of Wisconsin follow the money. And through tracking the money and then connecting the dots between all that campaign money and public policy decisions that elected officials make, we aim to keep Wisconsin government as clean and open and honest as possible, and keep elected officials on their toes and accountable to us. One of the things that you are right now living through is one of the most expensive and raunchy election campaigns in our history. And what we are also living through is one of the least transparent elections in history. It is incredibly difficult in this election cycle, more so than ever, to follow the money. And we specialize in trying to provide information on our website about who all these groups are. I was hearing radio ads just driving up here, most of them not sponsored by candidates, but by outside interest groups. Well, a lot of people are wondering, why the heck is this particular election like this? Why is it so expensive? Why are we going to see all kinds of election spending records set? And why the intensity of the campaigning and why is so much of it on taking the low road? Why is it so unrelentingly negative? Well, redistricting has a role to play in that too. The reason why we've got such expensive campaigns in Wisconsin in this election in particular, and why you are inundated with all this advertising, is that first and foremost, we have the first wide open race for governor in 28 years in Wisconsin. Either party could end up controlling the governor's office. We also happen to have both houses of the legislature currently controlled by one party, but by exceedingly narrow margins. So quite literally, either party could end up controlling either house of the legislature. And so that makes for very intense competition at the state level. We also have some very competitive races for Congress as well. The money, as a result, is flooding into Wisconsin. It is not just Wisconsin money that is bankrolling this election. It's coming from Washington, D.C. It's coming from all kinds of national sources. And some could even be coming from overseas. Our disclosure laws are not sufficient to let us know if that's happening. But there is evidence that it is possible, and it could very well be money from even overseas that is influencing elections right here in Wisconsin. Well, one of the reasons why there is such intense competition and why both major parties care so deeply about who controls the legislature and the governor's office is not just because they want to control the political agenda in 2011 and 2012, but they also want to control the political landscape for a decade to come, because this next legislature handles redistricting. They will be charged with the task of redrawing all of the district lines, and that is done once every 10 years after each census, and we are fixing to enter that very period. So that makes competition for legislative seats and for control of the state capitol all the more intense. They always want power, folks. But there is a particular intense desire to have power now, because it will affect 10 years worth of our political future. So that's one of the reasons why this is intensely important now. Let me start with a little vocabulary. And as I said, there are people here who could give this presentation, but for a lot of people, they hear certain terms and have no idea what those terms mean. For example, one of the things you often hear is the word redistricting used interchangeably with reapportionment. And people don't realize that actually reapportionment and redistricting are two different things. One of the things that has to happen after each census is the country has to be reapportioned. Population shifts. For example, the North is losing population relative to the South. Now, Wisconsin's population is growing, but we're not growing nearly as fast as states like Texas or Florida. States like Michigan and Illinois and Ohio are going to lose seats in Congress. So the number of seats, the representation that's apportioned to those northern states is going to decline. And the number of seats and the amount of representation that southern states will get, Arizona and Florida and Texas and throughout the fast-growing South, they're going to get more representation. They're going to get more seats. That's reapportionment. Once reapportionment has occurred, and by the way, every single analysis I've seen of preliminary census numbers indicate that Wisconsin will not lose a seat. We're not going to gain a seat, but we're not expected to lose one. The one state in our region that's on the bubble that may lose a seat and may not is Minnesota. For quite a while, people were expecting that Minnesota would lose a congressional seat, and just lately, within the past couple of weeks, I've seen some projections that actually have Missouri losing the seat instead of Minnesota. So Minnesota is right there on the edge. Could lose one, might not. Ohio, I think, will lose two. Michigan's going to lose, Illinois is going to lose, but Wisconsin lost one 10 years ago. We lost a congressional seat the last time redistricting is done, but we won't this time. That's reapportionment. Sort of divvying up the representation around the country. There's 435 members of the House of Representatives. What reapportionment decides is how many of those representatives each state gets. Redistricting is then the task of actually drawing those individual districts. 435 U.S. House of Representative districts, 132 different districts in the state legislature, there are 99 assembly districts, there are 33 state senate districts, all those district lines have to be drawn. Wisconsin's different, though, than most other states. Most states start at those top offices and go down to the local level. We do it in exactly the opposite fashion here in Wisconsin. Redistricting actually starts at the local level and it goes up to the state legislature and then to Congress. So the first step in redistricting will be right here in your backyard. City councils and county boards have to draw new jurisdictions for cities and counties. Those those wards, those political jurisdictions, the wards, end up being the building blocks that are used by our state lawmakers as they draw new legislative districts. So when decisions are being made here at the local level, that will not only have a big effect on who represents you and what kind of representation you get, but it ultimately will help shape what happens then at the Capitol in the next step of redistricting. Now, under the Wisconsin Constitution, it's the state legislature that has the authority to redraw our state's districts. But it has been an open secret for as long as anybody can remember that really it was people like Jim Sensenbrenner and Dave Obey who drew the congressional districts. It's the state legislature's responsibility, but you know, as a practical matter, state lawmakers would always defer to the sort of the ranking Democrat and the ranking Republican in the state congressional delegation, and whatever maps they drew for the House of Representatives is what they would adopt. So, you know, what redistricting has been is an incredibly closed process. For Congress, it pretty much has been two men who've sat down and worked out deals and come up with new districts for the House of Representatives. And that leads me to another term that is thrown around, but a lot of people may not know what it means, and that's gerrymandering. Gerrymandering actually gets its name from the former governor of Massachusetts who served in the early 1800s, a guy named Elbridge Gerry. Now, he pronounced his name Gerry, but for whatever reason, when they named this practice for him, it ended up the G got softened somewhere along the line, and we call it gerrymandering. But what Elbridge Gerry did out in Massachusetts is in order to maintain power for his own political party, he drew some very oddly shaped districts to make sure that districts had his kind of voters, the kind of voters who would support his party in maximum numbers. He drew one that looked a lot like a salamander to people, and they called it a gerrymander. And we've since, it's come to be known as a gerrymander now. But that salamander-shaped district is what that term was named for. And what it really is all about is just a name for the practice of making designer districts that are tailor-made for the re-election of those in power. And that's one of the reasons why we ought to care about redistricting, is that up to now, over the course of U.S. history, redistricting is all too often, it always has been an insider's game. It has always been about those in power creating districts that are tailor-made for the re-election of them and their allies, keeping incumbents in power and keeping their party faithful in power. That's what the redistricting process has always been marked by, is those sort of political shenanigans on the part of those in power. And they will draw sometimes very oddly shaped districts. There is an outfit called the Rose Institute that has done a report on redistricting. If you Google Rose Institute, you can find this. One of the things they did was they ranked the 10 ugliest districts in America. And there's a district in Wisconsin, a state assembly district in the Kenosha area, that made the top 10 list. And it's a district that has sort of a normal shape for a while, but then it has this spike that runs up the coast of Lake Michigan, this narrow little finger that runs up the coast that protrudes from the district. Those kinds of districts are drawn to capture voters and to make sure that the voters who would be most inclined to support the office holder in that district are packed into that district. And that's the practice of gerrymandering. So when you hear that term thrown around, that's what it's about. Here are my three reasons, my three leading reasons why ordinary folks ought to care about redistricting. The first is electoral competitiveness. You know, one of the things that frustrates people is that in so many parts of our state, people will say, well, the outcome of the election is a foregone conclusion. You know, I live in a district where, you know, one party has always held the seat and seemingly always will. And so there are Republicans living in Democratic districts who have no hope whatsoever of ever having a representative from their party. And similarly, there are Democrats living in Republican districts who will never have a chance to have somebody from their party representing them in something like the State Assembly or State Senate or the U.S. House of Representatives. It's because the way the districts have been drawn. The vast majority of districts in Wisconsin are politically lopsided. And they are, as a result, not remotely competitive in terms of election results. When you look over the last 10 years, if you look at the state legislature, I mentioned that there are 132 legislative seats, 33 in the Senate, 99 in the state assembly. The whole assembly is always up for re-election every 2 years. So every 2 years, all 99 seats are up. In the Senate, they have four-year terms, so one election year, there will be 17 of the 33 seats up for election, and the next 2 years later, there will be 16 of the 33 Senate seats up for election. So what you've got is, depending on the election year, either 116 or 117 state legislative seats that are up for grabs. In the last 10 years, the number of competitive elections In those districts, and I define competitive elections as those with an outcome within a 10-point margin, where the margin of victory is within 10 percentage points. When you think about that, 55-45 doesn't seem that close. I mean, that, a lot of people consider that a blowout. But the figures I'm going to give you, that's with elections that fall into that 10-point margin of victory. In the last 10 years, the number of competitive elections for state legislature has ranged from a low of 10 to a high of 29. Out of 116 or 117 elections, depending on the year you're talking about, the best, most competitive year, you saw 29 of those districts that produced outcomes within a 10-point margin of victory. The vast majority of those districts in Wisconsin, again, it is a foregone conclusion. It is either overwhelmingly Republican or overwhelmingly Democrat. And so since 2000, not surprisingly, state legislative incumbents have been reelected 95% of the time. In 2000, incumbents went 102-3. 102 wins, 3 losses. In 2002, incumbents were 89-6. In 2004, 91-4. Incumbents won 91, challengers won 4. In 2006, 97-9. And in 2008, 99-3. A lot of people looked at 2008 and thought it was a pretty intense competitive election year. And the thing is, Wisconsin, if you listen to the national pundits, if you listen to you know, the political experts, They talk about Republican red states and Democratic blue states, and they'll say Wisconsin's a classic purple state. We're not overwhelmingly Democratic or Republican. And indeed, Wisconsin, when you think about statewide elections here, we had Tommy Thompson serve as our governor for 4 terms, a Republican. But at the same time, we were electing Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold to represent us in the U.S. Senate, 2 Democrats. So they were all running statewide. They were appealing to the same voters, and yet these very different political beasts ended up winning these elections. This is a state that produced Joe McCarthy, that sent Joe McCarthy to the U.S. Senate, and it is a state that sent Gaylord Nelson the founder of Earth Day, to the U.S. Senate. So this is a state that you can see is sort of politically schizophrenic. I mean, we're very independent-minded people in Wisconsin. We can elect Democrats, we can elect Republicans, and indeed, when you look at the outcome of presidential elections, when you look at statewide elections, the margins are very, very close. This is that one of those classic battleground states. That's why all the presidential candidates come here, because Wisconsin is one of the few states that is totally up for grabs and either party could win. So you would think in this very purple state that legislative districts would look sort of purple. That you'd have a lot of districts that are sort of 52-48 or 51-49. But instead, we only have a handful of elections that even get within 55-45. It's a purple state, but the districts are bright blue or vivid red. That is because of redistricting. That is what redistricting can do. And if people want to shake up the system, and if people want to infuse new blood into the state legislature or into the Congress, if people want to just get their elected officials' attention by putting a scare into them at election time, redistricting makes it exceedingly difficult for voters to do that because there are so many lopsided districts. And you saw the numbers. I mean, incumbents have an incredible winning percentage. They are very difficult to take out, yet you see poll after poll that says the approval ratings of our state legislature is in the 20-some percent range, 30-some percent if it's a good moment for them. Congress, again, you see approval ratings in the 20-something percent. So you'd think that voters would be throwing people out if their approval ratings are that low, and yet their re-election rates are 95% on average over the last decade. That is what redistricting can do. Second reason that I would say redistricting matters